This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. Stop waiting around for the perfect candidate. Instead, use Indeed Sponsored Jobs to find the right people with the right skills fast. It's a simple way to make sure your listing is the first candidate see. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs have 4 times more applicants than non-sponsored jobs. So go build your dream team today with Indeed. Get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Hunt Stand. Hunt Stand is the number one hunting app in the country, and at only $29.99, Hunt Stand offers a ton of functionality for hunters all over the country. Whether you own your own property or strictly hunt public, you can choose from over a dozen base maps, view property ownership information, 3D mapping, local weather, log your sightings and harvest, as well as use their trail cam management software and print maps from your hunt areas. Download it today at the Apple App Store or Google Play. Hunt Stand. Upgrade your arsenal.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you.
Hey guys, welcome back. Land and Legacy Podcast here.
On a bright, hot, sunny
bright, hot,
day.
Sunny day here in late August.
With rain in the forecast, though. I know we've been complaining about hot, dry weather, but there is a little chance, a glimmer of some hope, a little reprieve in the intense heat around here. So,
yeah,
we're hoping.
You know, it's kind of one of those things. I've gotten asked quite a bit from some guys that are saying, hey, what's the, have you planted your food plots yet? And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
And because timing's been off, but the other one being
moisture.
Well, lack of moisture. But Chad and I, we had a major failure several years ago when we planted food plots. It's happened a couple of times, but 1 year sticks out in particular. We planted food plots and we had 2 days really good rain where it was like, that's perfect. Seed germinated, blew up, and then it baked it.
Yep.
And we're like, this is not good.
Mm-hmm.
This is not good. These little bitty young plants are poking out of ground.
They send
and it is
all that energy from the seed itself, expose themselves to then build roots. But when they expose themselves to baking,
it was like
hot sun,
almost 100 degree heat index,
yeah,
very similar to it is now. And I'm like,
yep,
I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
I would do it, however, if I had really good, like, thatch that was breaking down.
Sure.
I would probably go ahead and plant, but right now we're like, we'll just hold off.
Yeah.
So.
I.
How are you just doing? You've caught a few more rains than we have down on the farm.
A little bit more. Starting to see some rows pop, but there's still some areas that it hasn't germinated well, but I have a decent enough thatch to keep ground level shaded. It's coming along. If we get rain this afternoon and tonight, I think we'll be great for at least another week. If we don't get it, I don't have very high hopes.
Yeah.
But I was forced in a situation without the tractor being present. got a plant when the gentleman was able to do so.
Yeah.
So seed was there. We got a half inch right afterwards, but this week has been hot.
Oof.
There's a thatch load. So we'll see how they fare if they pull through this, if we get this rain in the next 2 days. So,
and once again, we're here in the middle of a late August, looking over a 10-day forecast, and tonight and tomorrow, the best chance we have. Today there's a 78%. Get this. Today in our hometown, or my hometown where you live now, there's a 78% chance of 0.05 inches of rain.
Woo.
Tomorrow is a 69% chance of 0.35.
Yeah.
So it's like there's a pretty good chance of a little dusting of rain.
It'll get the surface wet.
Yeah.
Seems like, especially when it's been so dry, it does not, as long as it's not like a downpour then just shut off, you'll get a little bit of incorporation into the ground. But if it comes in a thunderstorm situation where it's done and over with in 30 minutes, a lot of that stuff runs off. And it's just like a superficial rain.
Or if it does stick and like set for a second, it evaporates so quickly.
And this
and much of this, like I look out here across this pasture behind us, and it's monoculture, fescue, overgrazed. It's like that's just most of, if we got 3 inches of rain, 2 and a half inches of it's running off.
Yeah, sheeting off.
So, yeah, it's unfortunate. But that's where we're at. You know, there's a pile of seed orders that have come through, and we've been trying to send those orders over to Stratton and get them all situated. Hopefully, guys are everybody's getting caught up and getting their seed in the ground or getting their seed soon. But I keep getting the question from people is like, is it too late? I feel like it's too late for food plots.
Negative.
Right here. And I'm like, I don't know when the shift happened, but when I was growing up, Labor Day was the weekend that everybody planted their fall food plots. Labor Day. And here we are, and we're not even in September yet. Guys are like, is it too late?
No.
What happened? And I think I think part of that comes to a lot of people are doing food plots up north where the growing season is much shorter. So, like, they planted spring food plots later than us, and they plant fall food plots earlier than us because their window of time, their growing season, is much shorter than ours in the southern Midwest and in the south.
Specifically, right now, as we're going into fall, their frost date is sooner than ours.
Yep.
Like, that's what they're fighting against, but we don't have to worry about that in some situations, 20th, 25th of October.
Yep. And that's why, like, when guys ask me about planting certain varieties and, like, hey, what do you think about this? I'm like, it's a little bit different than what you're probably expecting. Like, buckwheat is a big one that that guys keep asking me about.
For
like,
fall planting?
No, for spring planting.
For spring.
Can I plant buckwheat and get me through the summer and then turn around? Like, buckwheat has a very short maturing time. And when I planted it here in the southern Midwest, what happens if I plant it mid-May or early May?
It's done
in July.
Yeah.
And I still have July and August to grow weeds, basically.
And the planting space of that buckwheat was.
Yeah. And so, which is the hardest time. Like, that's when I should have thatch. That's when I should have green plants most so I can conserve soil moisture in. And so then, you know, that opens the door. If you don't have active plants growing during July and August, you're going to likely get goosegrass, crabgrass, many other problematic species. And then you have to figure out how to get rid of them and then go into fall planting. It's like, just plant a diverse blend, like a heritage blend, something with all these different varieties. So
cover the basis, which covers the ground.
Yes. So, yeah, I'm... And then even the early planting, that was kind of the point of that, was so many guys are planting now, you know, they say hot or dry, plant in July when it comes to turnips. And a lot of guys up north are planting their brassicas in July.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Which is fine. I even plant brassicas in here in July, around here. But that doesn't mean that that's when you plant cereal grains.
Correct.
That doesn't mean that's when you plant clovers.
Different species.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, I don't know if people pay attention. It'd be hard not to see it if you're involved in especially the cattle side of the world. But even lawn care, even food plots, armyworms are horrific in the South this year. Oklahoma.
Well, Kansas. I've
Kansas is terrible. I've seen reports of them in Iowa. Mm-hmm. I've seen reports in them in Missouri, Arkansas, Alabama.
Yep.
I've seen them like different Kentucky. I've seen them all over. And not just like, oh, yeah, they're eating up my food plots. Like, they're eating pastures, lawns, eating everything.
Right.
And that's the other gamble you face when you plant early is if you have a big, beautiful, lush food plot and along comes.
I had a picture sent to me 2 days ago, and everyone knows what, take army worms out of the occasion or out of the situation. There's still insects. There's still aphids. There's still so many different types of insects that are out there that they consume leaves. And yep. No matter what you do, if you're planting and you have an emerging fall food plot during late summer stress and it's hot and it's dry, but there's fresh new vegetation, guess what? That's the ice cream. Even insects are going to be going to that outside of bad army worm year. So you need to be expecting that type of, you should see some insect damage a little bit, or you should expect it.
Yeah,
this time of year, it's going to happen
from a native species like them.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So it's not too late though. I mean, we go by the thought process of 4 to 6 weeks before your frost date. That gives mm-hmm. enough time to germinate, grow, get established, have that root system to continue growing.
Weather
through.
Dependent.
Yep.
Obviously,
going through
a couple of times. You know, we've had terrible fall growing seasons the last 5 years. It seems like. I know for the last four, and that's one thing when we promote the Legacy blend is kind of, and guys have been a little bit unhappy. I'm like, dude, it didn't rain. It doesn't yeah. matter how good the seed is.
It doesn't
is.
Matter what the seed is.
I don't care if you got, what is that? The miracle bean. I don't care if yeah. you got Jim's miracle beans.
It doesn't germinate without rain.
It doesn't grow. It doesn't without grow rain.
Without
so,
rain.
Yeah. But, you know, there's certain things you can do to ensure success, not tilling,
or,
not
yeah,
disking.
Improve soil moisture, water retention.
Weeds, help fight off weeds, keep a thatch on the surface yep. of the soil so it holds the moisture in, all those things. But even then, you can still have problems.
Yeah, for
nothing's,
sure.
Nothing's given in that aspect.
Well, I
so.
Think that goes into the entire theme of land and legacy is there's not one situation where it's like, okay, it's 6 weeks before the first frost date, now we need to plant. No, everything is situationally based, and we need to have and include these variables into our plan to make sure we have the best outcome. And sometimes we have to plant a week or two later. Sometimes we can bump up a planting date from year to year. It's just based on current conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Field, rain, all these things work in to make the best suggestions.
Yeah. One thing before we jump in, I know we've been trying to keep everybody in the loop. One thing we struggle with, you know, that we're somewhere in 350 podcasts. We've done a pile of them. And one thing that kind of we're so busy, sometimes we forget to really tell people about what's going on as far as trips we've been on and where we've been in the world.
Yep.
Because consulting is... That felt like some raindrops right there. Consulting is really the bread and butter of our business.
Yep.
And I wanted to share a little bit of a story here for people because I posted about it and I had several guys message me and text me and ask questions. But, you know, in all of our travels, we've been in 30 states now and all pretty much everywhere in between from New York to Texas and Minnesota, North Dakota now to yep. Florida. The one thing that is fun is meeting the people but seeing some of the weird things that they've done to their
yeah.
farms. And I was recently on a property in Kansas that had something unlike anything I've ever experienced. And so I told people I'd talk about it on the podcast. So I went to a redneck water park. And Matt, you know, so people know...
Well,
when inquiries come through the website, yep. you get a hold of Matt. When they come through social media, you get a hold of me. And what's kind of the best way we've figured out just to tackle all the messages and emails and things that come in. And Matt said he booked this one and to bring swimming trunks because there was a redneck water park. I had no idea what we were getting into.
I did. I wasn't given much detail. I just heard redneck water park. That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
You might want to be prepared. And well, and it's August, too, so it's going to be hot.
Yeah. I knew it was going to be hot, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, when you hear the word redneck, you kind of have an assumption of,
like,
okay.
Safety. How
safety?
Much?
Definitely not OSHA. OSHA does not come to mind.
Yeah.
And then water park was like, I'm picturing America's Funniest Home Videos.
Oh, yeah.
With a track hoe, like spinning around with the guy holding onto a rope swing and him slowing down and then cramming his skull into
to the
side of the boom.
No, thanks.
I was like, I'm not sure if I even – can I do the little trick? Oops, forgot my swimming trunks. but I didn't. I took them anyway, and I'm like, we'll just see what we're getting into. And I can't even I was not even prepared for what I saw. So for some of the listeners, this was a property that had strip mines on it. They were mining gravel. So
it's pretty common in Kansas.
In places, where you can find that. But they were mining gravel, and he had, I forget, like 4 to 6 different
pools. Yeah.
Around. And this one pool, the big one, he had set up all kinds of different activities to enjoy for family and friends. And so he had, over the course of a couple of years, built these massive slip and slides. So one of them was like 500 foot.
Goodness.
And you just and it's dual, so like
two
lanes. You can go down, race. And then from that one, you would swim around the point peninsula or walk all the way back. So a multiple acre lake here, pond, whatever you call it. And then there was another one that had a slip and slide with a ramp at the end. That was probably, I don't know, 300 foot, something like that.
Right.
That you would go down and at this ramp, I don't know, you're probably 10 foot off the surface of the water when you hit the ramp. And you're going down this long hill.
Launches you.
There was times where... Like when the first time I went down it, now you go down on a boogie board, and you pitch the boogie board off to the side so you don't land on it and crush it. But like pitch it off to the side.
Or crush yourself.
And then I'm like, okay, throw it to the side and then get your arms up and dive in. No problem. That sounds easy.
I could do that.
Uh-uh. When
do
I
your feet want to keep coming over top of you?
Like, okay, I go off of it and you feel like you shot out of a cannon.
Yeah. Yeah,
like throw the boogie board off, and by the time I throw the boogie board off, kind of wave the arms once or twice to get myself balanced back out and stick my arms up to dive, I didn't even have enough time to get my arms like locked in. So I would hit, and it would like rip my arms down.
Dang.
And it's like, oh, my. I might have tore a rotator cuff doing that. But that was a lot of fun.
And
it's just three grown men doing this.
Yeah,
so it's like
the
wives aren't there to say, are you sure this is a bad
idea? Right.
So you got that one. Then there's another one that's about the same, maybe a little shorter, that launches you out, and it this actual slip and slide hit the surface, the edge of the water. And whenever you would like skip out like a flat rock out across
that's
the lake.
That's cool.
So there was that one. Then there was another one that that he had built this like A-frame telephone pole that went almost I don't know, not straight down, but felt pretty darn close.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one I shared the video of on social media. Drop down, it's, I don't know, 200 foot. And then at the end of it, it's another ramp that's more steep than the other one I told you about.
Yeah.
At the top of it is 16 foot from the waters. So if you go through, I don't know how far, over 20 foot in the air, and you either have to, in those few seconds that you're waving your arms and kicking your legs, you have to decide, am I going feet first or diving?
Yeah, for sure.
And if you made the wrong mistake, it was a humongous
then
belly.
Then you're caught somewhere in between, and it's not going to feel good.
Yeah. And one of the guys with us did a backbuster on it. It was just like, whoa. It had and over one of the canals, like a rope.
You realize
rope,
how
drawbridge.
Much surface tension there is in water.
Oh, yeah.
At that point.
Yeah. And so then there was a drawbridge, I think, like a rope bridge that you walk across. And there was also a high dive that was like 30 foot that had rope swings off of it.
How deep was it, did they estimate?
I forget what he said. 12 or 20 foot somewhere in the deepest spot. He said only one guy's ever touched the bottom.
Oh, wow.
Like going off the jumps and stuff. But the other thing, too, that was interesting, he had these other slides that were like the plastic culvert pipes.
Yeah, yeah.
That you would go down, and they were kind of like had some loops in them, and they would jump out. It was the most insane thing. The other part, too, is I forget what I wanted to say he called it a Russian swing. It was like a circus act swing.
Yeah.
Where it's one of those where you can go all the way around the bar.
And oh, like two people. Yeah.
He had one of those. Oof. And he's like, you got to try this. I can get you launched way out there. And I was very hesitant because I'm like, you know, there was a time in my life I was very coordinated. But yeah, it is
those,
not
those
now.
Those years have kind of passed, you know, a little bit.
Kids and not playing sports.
My coordination now revolves around driving fence posts in the ground. That's as much as I go. There, yeah. It doesn't involve a bat and a ball or a golf ball and golf club.
Exactly. It's not like I could run out and jump over a fence like a hurdle, no problem. No, like there'd be issues.
Anymore.
And so he did that, and he's like, jump. And I was trying to time it. I mean, we're swinging pretty good. At this point, I'm like, I'm going to knock my teeth out on this.
Yeah.
Thing. I'm going to jump up, and the thing's going to swing back, and I'm going to land flat right back where I was.
You let fear creep in, Adam.
Oh, I did. And about the time I pushed off was about the time we hit the peak, and it was going back the other way.
Oh.
So I went almost straight down into the water.
That's funny.
Managed to sneak a dive in, but I was like, that's good. I'm done with that. Had a springboard diving board.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 6 foot up there. It was insane. The worst thing that people would probably love this, but the worst thing for me that I did not do is the one thing I didn't do was a one of those slingshots. He had major bungee cords tied up. You would get in a harness.
My.
You would get in a harness. Telephone poles on the side.
No
then he would
way.
Drive a four-wheeler back. And then launch you, and you just go choo, 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 back and forth on the slingshot.
Oh, it wouldn't release you.
He didn't release you. No.
No. I would consider the release game, but I'm not getting whiplash in that Joker.
No.
That sounds like death's saddle right there.
That's what I was thinking. I'm like, I could just see the news report. Redneck water park. Man dies being
fatal.
Launched. Yeah. Shooting towards a lake and overshot it and landed on his head on bank.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So it was, and, you know, he's got all kinds of stuff. But to me, it was like one of those where it's like, you know, I'm sure there's old abandoned mines and strip mines. I mean, we've worked properties that have that.
Yeah.
It's just like there's all kinds of cool things you can do to attract the family to the property. And one thing he was talking about doing was, if he knocked out a few little spots, a few little runways, he could make a mile and a half circle through all the ponds. So basically you could get jet skis and go. He hadn't done it yet.
Didn't know
if he was going to do it. But I was like, man, that right there, that'd be hard. Like during the summer months, that would be pretty stinking fun to enjoy.
I just got this message sent. Look at all that rain that just blew up.
Oh, yeah. Chad said it's supposed to be raining at the farm right now. My grandparents,
quite a bit of red mixed in, eight miles
south of the farm, had over an inch of rain just today, which I'm like, well, I guess we should have planted. But if I'd have planted, it would have got a tenth of an inch and been done.
So this is Jeff Willis.
Oh, he texted me yesterday.
He says be sure to make fun of Adam Foe. Quote,
not
waiting.
Yeah.
But this wasn't forecasted.
No.
There was never been an inch that ever said that was going to happen today.
Yeah.
That's just luck of the draw at that point.
Yep.
But anyhow, yeah, it's actually blowing up pretty good. So we're about to get hit there at the house, and it looks like it already got hit too. Cool.
Yep.
That sounds like a lot of fun. That was one of those ones. I had stuff booked. I was like, oh, this is going to be a pretty enjoyable. And you knew it was going to be hot as the Dickens out there in August and on the prairie and whatnot. So
many seed ticks.
Oh, really?
8:30 in the morning, loaded with seed ticks.
And you got the whole day to wear them clothes and sweat in them. And fun.
It was one of those.
The joys of August consulting.
Oh.
However, we do want to bring some knowledge truth bombs to the podcast.
I think the title says it all.
It does. And I think that if anyone who listens to the podcast long enough, they realize that conventional wisdom or the general flow.
Yeah.
We stop there and say, okay, and just ask the questions, why is it like that? And I think it is sometimes we do try and reinvent the wheel, but because the wheel isn't perfected and, we found this to be true in the whole situation of hunting and hunting deer efficiently and effectively. And I want that to be like the understanding of where this is coming from, because there's a lot of people who, spend a lot of time in the woods, way more than Adam and I do, hunting every single fall, and are very successful. However, everyone's time is
depends on your
limited
level of success, or what your definition of success. Too.
Sure, yeah. but there's a lot of people,
and I don't mean that from a hunting standpoint. Like, I'll talk about that in a second too. But
the let's just define the conventional wisdom is. The phrase generally is said, what, is this Jeff?
Yeah, you don't, yeah, you can just see the comment.
Little tattletale, yeah.
Yeah, that's a tattletale. Yeah, yeah.
So he, okay, so the conventional wisdom here is you can't kill deer on the couch.
Yep.
And we're simply saying you can kill deer on the couch. Obviously, that's a figure of speech. We don't literally mean that. Although it's probably been done before.
Some guys have done it.
Some guys guarantee have done it. However, what we're saying is it's not necessarily about the quantity of time, the number of hunts, the number of hours you're in the tree stand. It's more about the quality of the sits that you have.
That's right.
And knowing when to not hunt opposed to knowing when to hunt. Everyone knows if you're a seasoned hunter or you're beginning to hunt, you know the days in the field that just conditions line up and it's like, wow, this is going to be a good day. This is going to be good movement. Everyone can identify those 10 to 15 degree temperature changes, high pressure situations, the movements of fronts back and forth. When there's changes in the weather, that means, generally speaking, deer are going to move in relation to that. We can all see that. So the days that are good to hunt are pretty apparent. I don't think they're questioned often. Yep. I think what happens, though, is we, as outdoorsmen, who enjoy time in the field, just think, I'm going to be successful if I'm there, or I'm going to have that opportunity. And that's not the case. I think that many times if you're hunting deer too often, you're putting too much pressure in situations. And then if you're not having that success or those observations because you're hunting stands that are, let's say, inferior to your best spots,
yep,
you get frustrated. And then therefore you say, well, I know where I need to be, because what you've done is you've eliminated where the deer aren't. And then, yep, and then it forces you to say, well, now, since I know deer aren't there and I've put pressure on those, now I have to go to my best spots. And you're probably doing that when those best spots aren't heating up because you've hunted too much.
When the buck, let's just say that, you know, I see this a lot where you get the trail cam pictures of the buck on these three cameras. You try to identify bedding from those cameras and say, okay, yeah, he's coming this way, he's going that way in the mornings, okay, he's probably bedded over in this region, I have a few stands in that mm-hmm. pocket of timber, okay, I'm not seeing deer on my other cameras as frequently, and they're only does occasionally, I'm trying to kill a buck, let's go in after him,
mm-hmm.
and he's nocturnal anyway,
yeah,
the chances of you seeing him during daylight are very low. But yet you go in there and make that disturbance to where you can forget about seeing him. You push him to other regions of his home range. You make him nocturnal. You bump him over to the neighbor.
Yep.
Overall, you just lower the overall productiveness of your farm because you got excited because you had a good buck on camera when you could have just let him be, wait until he is moving during daylight. You do catch a cold front, and then you can go in and have a better chance at him. I'm hugely guilty of this. I did this so much as a young kid.
For sure.
Running cameras and be like, okay, you know, we hunted hard on a buck we called Doc back in 2015. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we hunted the same stand several sets in a row.
Yeah.
There was a reason for that. We had an encounter. We saw the bucks he was hanging with. Like, we were on that deer.
Right.
But if you remember what happened later in the fall, it wasn't until late gun season when he finally showed back up on the very northern side of the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And
during daylight.
During daylight. And yep. During the rut. Obviously, mm-hmm. It took the rut to get him moved. But it was like he went MIA, and then all of a sudden he shows up north side of the farm.
Yep.
It's like, what in the world?
So we were spending time applying pressure on different portions of the property. He wasn't even there.
Now,
it almost paid off for us.
But at the same time, if we didn't own the north side of the farm, we'd have never seen that deer again.
Right. And that was a
most likely
several hundred yard move. I mean, that was a 600 yard move probably.
Yeah.
And for a lot of properties, that can be the difference between on you or off you.
Yep.
And so there's times to strike. There's times where certain properties or certain stands are going to be the best.
Yeah.
It's just whether it's topography, whether it's the habitat features, the vegetation features there, whether it is the fact that it's just a funnel or a travel corridor, they hunt different or better at different times of the year. And we have to understand that. And a lot of this podcast kind of stems from a recent visit. We talked about last week, we're in the Northeast, and specifically this was a 40-acre parcel. I had this discussion with the landowner because he noticed that one stand in particular that was identified and it kind of just jumped out on a map after we toured most of the property that I was excited about. It's a 40-acre parcel. And I kept referencing, like, this one stand. I was like, okay, yeah, you could hunt here, but at the right time of the year, the same deer that shows up here, he's coming through this other stand, stand A.
Yeah.
You can hunt and have B, C, D, E, F, G, so on, so on. I said, but honestly, don't go in there to stand A because that's your primo, your top spot, whatever. Don't do that until it's game on because everything, you've got 40 acres here, all the deer that that or moving through this property at some point or another. It's set up so good. The access was so fine that it was just going to happen there. They were going to move through there at some point. So if you have, let's say you have four different deer that you're targeting on the property or, you know, in the area, when they're moving through, it was going to be there consistently.
Yeah.
It just was so. Like, it just, I no other way to describe it. It's like, it's not about... It's a balance between I like being in the field, I like taking time, and just honestly being in creation. We can't get away from that.
Yeah.
But don't get out of the gate sprinting and put pressure on those best spots as season's opening up if that's not the best time to hunt that place.
Yeah. I feel like there's really two groups of people. There's the guys who hunt really hard and get to hunt really hard, and then there's a groups of guys who wish they got to hunt really hard, and they go into the season like, oh, I haven't even hunted yet. I probably won't hunt till late October. And in my opinion, those guys probably have the freshest, easiest to hunt property because if they set it up correctly, just like us, like we've hunt very little early season.
We're sparing, very sparing.
And then all of a sudden October hits and deer are still moving. Deer are still great because we haven't put much pressure on the place.
Yep.
And that's where I feel like the guys who sit there, especially the dads, the business owners are like, oh, I just don't know about, you know, I've got work going on. I've got kids, whatever going on.
Kids,
I've got
soccer, football, whatever.
I've got something going on that doesn't allow me to go out September 15th or September 16th and September 19th and September 22nd, September 28th, where you don't get that and you go out and you're like, oh, I haven't even hunted yet. I don't really know what the deer are doing. Well, if you've cut in the bedding and you got food plots, we have a pretty good idea what the deer are doing.
It's not rocket science at that point. It's predictable based on, again, a combination of topography and what vegetation plant communities are there. We can make a really good educated guess on where we should hunt in those situations. But if you throw high pressure, hunting pressure into that equation, well, it muddies the water of that what could be clearly defined movement based on the habitat and based on topography. It changes that game when you throw pressure into that mix, and it's a variable that honestly isn't necessary, because there are portions of most properties where it is. I think everyone could identify. Let's just say you have 10 stands. Someone could say, well, those are my three favorite, right?
Oh, I'm that way. Like, I don't remember. We've got half a dozen or a dozen to 20 stands, let's just say.
Right.
I got five that I really like. The rest of them are kind of like, meh, we got a chance.
But let's be really honest. Last year, how many different stands did you hunt because time is limited? You had 20 options every single time you went to
maybe
the field.
Four.
Right, you hunted four of them.
Yeah.
How frequent, though, is that in a conversation working with landowners in the field? Okay, how often do you hunt this? I haven't hunted that in years. I haven't hunted that one in years.
And you know what those stands are? Death traps.
Yeah, they are. Because you haven't
been the last time you
no
checked
attention.
The straps on that one?
Uh-huh. Yeah. No, and no shooting lanes trim, no nothing. Yeah. So in by default, we all know where some of the best stands are. And this is taking the information of we all have the best
I'd
stops.
I'd be glad if it rained at this point. It is hot.
It's hot
sticky out here.
You got shorts on. I got pants from church.
Well, yeah, and the sun is just baking me.
But we all know that, okay, we can identify top good quality stands, but still you need to stay out until the right time frame.
Yeah.
Even with those conversations that everyone knows, don't just default go to your best stand because you've had the best. It's probably a reason in a timing situation that deer frequented that area.
Yeah.
Then the most, it's not necessarily equivalent throughout the entire season. So know your times and when to strike. And think quality over quantity when it comes to setting up a property and having those tree stands out there.
Yeah.
You're going to be way more further down the road in a success standpoint by keeping things fresh, undisturbed.
And to me, I think early season, unless you know of a deer's pattern, you've made the observations, for a lot of guys, they don't have the ability to go and sit on their fields or sit around food plots, sit on observation stands.
Right.
Pre-season.
Yeah.
So then when season opens up, they can just jump in. Right. It's like, now that season's open, now let me observe my way in.
Yes.
And so when you observe your way in, you set out back away from all the bottlenecks and you try to look in and you really try to just almost do it without ever disturbing anything. And so early season to me is that, like, let's try to observe our way in. Let's try to take it, tiptoe our way into the property. So by the time October 15th hits, deer of shed velvet, they've started really kind of falling into their fall, winter home ranges.
Yep.
And we have the better idea of where to hunt and how to get there rather than just jumping right into the deep end right out of the gate.
Right. Well, it honestly kind of reminds me, last year was the first year on Elise. I had Seth's information that he had hunted, but it wasn't a property that he hunted and frequented a lot until a certain time of the year when the property just blew up. So my approach last year was, and it's a little bit limited access, but anyhow, started from kind of the north, and I made three moves inward to the property. Finally, 1st of November is when that last move happened, but it was a staggered, okay, I'm going to advance, let's say, 100 more yards. Here's another 80 yards, and got me to be able to see, okay, truthfully, I need to move one more time, 80 yards, and that's the point where it's going to happen at. And that's what did happen.
Yeah.
Everything that, you know, needed to see, needed to be able to cover with a bow during archery and then with the gun could happen right there. But it was not until the point of, okay, I feel like I've observed enough and confident enough that when these conditions arise during this time of the year, I'll be in that tree, but not until then.
You and I just aren't living right, my friend.
What?
I'm watching the radar, and there was a big yellow glob right to the farm. And you know, it's kind of like a heartbeat. It's like boom, 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 boom.
Ebbs
decreasing.
And
yeah, and it goes sucked up, and then went right north, right past the farm. We got a little bit of rain, but could have looked like it was going to dump a lot more.
Well, son of
then
God.
I'm watching yours.
Don't watch it.
Same
Don't
thing.
Tell
you got green, 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 yellow, yellow, yellow. And it just kind of went.
Fizzled.
Just skirted right by you.
Darn.
Yeah.
Well.
So, oh, well. We'll catch
maybe,
one sooner
maybe,
or later.
Yeah. Maybe tomorrow.
Yeah, maybe. So, anyway. Yeah, I think for overall, though, early season is one of those where it's like, it's great the season will be opening up, but it's also. I mean, don't fret that you can't get out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't get out there and get overly ambitious. And ultimately, don't blow out your good sets. It's like
right.
We have sets like the tree, notorious for being a great rut set. We don't ever hunt it early season.
Mm-mm.
So,
And that's an area that we're logging-wise, it's not really happening logging-wise.
Yeah.
It probably would be a great option to even go to now, but it's... You're
wind
not going to do that.
Swirl. It'll
yeah.
be a nightmare.
Not even going to do it. It's not worth it. So there's a lot of variables that go into these decisions, conversations, and whatnot. But essentially, don't be the guy who sprints out of the gate if you're looking for long-term success. I know some places don't open up till October 1, and then they're done January 1. So your season's a little bit shorter compared to early September, mid-January, late January finish, but there still is time. Quality versus quantity sits is how you get it done.
Yep. All right, guys. Appreciate you joining us this week. What else was I going to say?
I don't know.
I was going to send a reminder of something, but I totally forgot what I was going
to
tell him to do.
Oh, there's some more hunts coming on to the mm-hmm. YouTube channel in the coming weeks,
yep.
The coming months, and some additional content. So
hopefully
check
this fall
out.
We send out more and more videos on our YouTube. So search Land and Legacy on YouTube. Guys, appreciate it. We'll catch you next week.
Yep. See ya.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.